the boys in particular, men, only a few years ago.
The brig Lily that was blown up in the Calf had been before your time.
Yeah, or rather, my great-grandfather was one of the victims there.
Was he?
Yes. And do you see that there?
That ring?
Yes.
Yes.
That came out of the brig Lily.
Well?
That was picked up on the shore after the explosion.
By Jove.
Hmm.
It's a long time since anybody'd remember that. No one would.
Oh, there's no one alive that remembers that. That it was in 1852, you know.
Oh, dear. Oh,
yes, 18. That disaster happened on the 28th of December, 1852. And there was 29 men killed and one man wounded beside that.
It was gunpowder or something, wasn't it?
Well, the Brig Lily had general cargo, but and among the cargo was about 300 tons of gunpowder, and that's it. But how did that explode?
How did it get ignited?
That's what's been puzzling people since. Of course, the theory was that there'd been someone's plunder in the night before, and with candles, the authorities had come on them too sudden, and they'd left everything behind them and the candles burning. That's what they reckon was the cause of it, but that's only theory, mind you.
Was she actually aground when she...
Oh, she was on the island, yes. Oh, she was on the ground. On the, you know, do you know the sound?
I know the sound, yes.
Well, do you know that the Kittilin?
The Kittilin, yes.
Well, on the south tail of Kittilin, that's where that happened.
Oh.
She was left Liverpool... on bound to West Africa. I don't know what port in South Africa, in West Africa. And she got down channel pretty well, and she encountered gales of southwest wind, and she was blown back, or the sails all torn and all the rest of it, and it was a case of run before the sea, and that's where she landed. And that's how she got in there.
Mm.
They couldn't help themselves. There was none of the crew. I don't think there was any of the crew ever lost at all. These were all these lives that were lost were people that were trying to sell the cargo.
Oh.
Yes. Oh, there was a lot to it. I've heard it said that there was terrible, lot of, there were every house in one street in Port St. Mary had a casualty. Had a, mourned for someone.
Yes.
Yes.
You didn't get a sewing machine off the Glen MacMaster.
That's only quite recent. That I was away at sea when I've seen the Glen MacMaster when she was on the rock there, right enough. But I believe I've seen some of the cotton. I used some of the cotton that would come out of her.
Oh yes.
Yes. Oh, that's only recent history. That's not ancient at all.
No.
No.
Which lighthouse would be on? Was Chickens built in your day? Or
yes, the Chickens. Yes, the Chickens.
Because there are two other lighthouses, aren't there?
On the Calf. Oh, but the Chickens was lit and used and they were done away with. But the lighthouses were still there. I believe they're still.
They're still.
Yes. Yes.
And what did you do after you left the sea? You went deep sea, did you?
After I left what?
After you left fishing.
Yes, I went to the merchant service.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Yes, I went in the merchant service, knocking around the coast, and spent the most of the time in the merchant service around the British coast.
Yes.
I've been round the British Isles more times than fingers and toes on me, anyhow. Yes.
I suppose if you hadn't learned Manx as a very young child, but you'd just learned it as somebody a little older, you'd have forgotten it. It's remembering it as a child.
Yes, that's it.
Your head, I think.
Yes, I think that has something to do with it.
Yes. And,
but look here, about the fishermen, I'll tell you this too. A lot of them had two strings to their bow. A lot of them had, not all, mind you, not. Well, there was a percentage of them, and that's the best way to put it. They were either weavers, tailors, cobblers, joiners, masons, or blacksmiths, or sailmakers. Mm-hmm. You see, and in the winter time, this stood in good stead for quite a number of them.
Yes.
Because the carpenters, of course, built the boats, or repaired them. The blacksmiths did the iron work. The sailmakers made the sails.
Yes.
The rope makers made the ropes for the sails and for the nets. And well, I could repeat the whole thing, I suppose.
Yes.
Yeah. But it's no use coming over it twice.
No. When the Deemster passes laws in Manx today, do you think he'd be able? He just takes it as a. He can't actually speak Manx.
No. He can't. I understand. But it's 2 years now. He's read the laws hidden in the Manx.
That's right.
That's Deemster Moore.
Deemster Moore. Yes.
Now, in fairness to the man, I thought he made a very good shot.
Yes, because it's very difficult, isn't it?
It is difficult. Now, he could only read it and pronounce it as he read it.
Exactly.
You see, he couldn't put he couldn't give it the proper pronunciation.
No.
But this year, I don't know what happened. My wireless gave in that morning, and I didn't hear what. And I would have. I shut everything off. I was disgusted. Yes, because I didn't hear. I couldn't criticize him, or I couldn't give him a clap on the back because I didn't hear him this time. But I thought he made a good shot for it.
Good.
I've shaken hands with Moore.
Yes.
Deemster Moore. He wasn't Deemster Moore then.
No.
And another thing, I know his father very well.
Yes. Nice chap.
The
father.
Fine. Fine man, yes. Fine man. Fine man, he was. R.B. Moore.
Yes.
Yes. I was at a Spelling Hospital one time, and when I was just before I was fit to come out, I was ready to come out. He used to come into the hospital quite often. But I knew him before that because I was doing duty at Craignish for the Manx Museum. And he was, of course, one of the big noises at the time. And he came to my bedside on this occasion and he said, "Any hopes of you getting out yet?" I said, "Yes, I believe I'm going next week." And he says, "You'll not be fit to go home in a bus," he said. Mm-hmm. "Oh, no," I said, "no, I won't be fit to go in a bus, I don't think." "Oh, well," he says, I'll run you home." I said, "Thank you very much, but I've had so many offers," I said, "I think I'll take the first that offered and leave you the fairest." But, and the last time I was speaking to him was at Victoria Street, waiting for a bus, and I met him. This is about 10 years ago now. I asked him how he was getting on. "I'm doing all right," he said, "but I'm feeling I'm getting old." Now he'll be 10 years older than that. That's what I was speaking for. I don't know what he'll be thinking like that, where I am enough. Yes.
Well, we'll have to have some thanks from you. What do you think, the Lord's Prayer, or?
I'll give you the Lord's Prayer.
I'd like that.
Yes. Yes. Now, say when you're ready.
When you're ready, now.
Ear ein tons now, kashrik drau the enum, the jig dra reich, the agna drau gentar tolo mations now, kur den niraran ju as gach le, as lai dun na lochten matasin lai dousand the genu lochten an an ai, na lidchen sons mjodach, ach liverishin ve olk, son latsin ra reich, in poor as a glor, son the brech as the brech, amen.
Here, skip Billy's knife. Where's he, Ron?
Yeah, 25 times 5.
That's the sustain.
Thank you.
Belonging to Portsmouth, Mary, Port Erin, and Castletown. Castletown was the customs port, of course. There were CT boats. There was over 100, or about 100 in my young days. There were 121 was the numbers, as far as the numbers. But there were some that would fall out and lost and all the rest of it. Each of them boats carried 6 men and a boy. That is to say, there were 600 men and 100 boys employed in the boats at sea. That was outside of the people who were employed on the shore, such as carpenters, joiners, blacksmiths, net makers. There were 2 net factories in Port St. Mary, where they made nets for for mackerel and for herring. They're different size mesh, you see, and it's for each of them. So that was all done on the spot. And there's also a rope walk in Port St. Mary where the rope was made for the mount down to these nets.
I see.
Yes.
And would any of the herrings be exported, or would they be used for local consumption?
Oh, yes, it was exported. In my young days, it was exported, but the thing almost died out, you see, since I started in it, like. The thing, a lot of it was shipped to the mainland. It wasn't like shipped to the continent as it has been since a few years ago. They started to export it to Holland and in fact the pheasant that's caught around this coast now it goes to Holland.
That's right.
Yes.
I've seen in paintings by John Aitken.
Yes.
Pictures of
the fleet.
Boats with the fleet, but with the funnels.
With the
what? They'd be little steam boats, would they? With funnels. They looked as though they were coal burning little fishing boats.
Oh, there was no. I tell you that there was the only funnel that I ever seen in a fishing boat in my time was a funnel that would. From the stove where the cooking was done on.
This would be
and there
the
was 90s. A little, I'll tell you this, there was a little boiler also in the cabin which provided steam for a small, what would I call them, a small engine, you see, it was, of course, for to haul in the nets. That is to say, the nets was fastened onto a rope, and this rope then was put onto a winch, and in the old days, of course, it was all handwork, you know what a winch is?
Yes.
Well, then, they did away with that and installed this little funnel that you're talking about, which was going up out of the cabin, and that provided the steam for to haul the nets in.
A little winch.
A little winch, yes.
It must have been rather dangerous when all those boats were out and there was no radar. They didn't know whether a storm was coming.
You're telling me. I know what it was, all right.
How far out would they be? About 10, 12 miles?
We went from here to the south of Ireland to fish mackerel. I was at the age of 14, a boy in one of the boats, and we were fishing up to 50 miles off the Irish coast in the Atlantic from March onward till about June. And then, of course, after that, when we came back here, we changed the gear. That was for mackerel fishing I'm speaking of. After that, the herring gear was put on board, and we went to the Shetland Islands, 500 miles away from here, all sealed. Yes. And that was in my day. I was myself. I started as a boy at 14, a cook, as they called them, and I finished up 10 years later as skipper of one of the boats. And I finished up. I took the boat to the Irish fishing, and then also to the Shetland fishing, and I never had a mishap.
Thank you. The mackerel would be sorted down, would they?
No, the mackerel was bought in by the companies and exported from the Irish ports. Mind you, we were working out of an Irish port.
I see.
Don't think that we were working out of Port St. Mary and fishing off in the Atlantic.
No, of course
no.
not.
We, the fishing was so, the fish was sold to buyers on the spot, like in the different ports in the south of Ireland. And they exported that from that to the English ports, you see. But of course that was run by small fast steamers and that.
Yes.
But that mackerel was all caught in sailing boats.
Yes.
Yes.
Now, what would they do during the winter, the fishermen?
Well, then, the snag, you see. That only lasted about 6 months of the year, you know, the two fishings. You had to find something else
to do.
You had to find something else, or, well, you know, tighten your belt, if you like to call it.
They tell me that all these stone walls were built by fishermen during the winter.
Who?
All these stone walls were often
built. Yes, yes, anything at all. Anything was, they took on any job, though.
Yes.
Wages were low, of course. Yep. Half a crown a day, threepence an hour, threepence an hour for a 10-hour day.
Aye.
All these walls that you see going out here was all built for threepence an hour.
Aye, by Jove.
And to emphasize what I have said as far as the men, the building of these walls, I built these walls here myself, and I never served a minute to the trade.
Yes, I've heard that the fishermen could build walls as good as a stonemason.
And well, here, have a look at them. Mm. This wall out in front of you here, I built that myself.
Yes.
Mm. Yes.
And they'd work on the farms a bit too.
They were anything at all, but a lot, we had to go off, there wasn't always work of this kind, but you took anything that come your way, you see.
Yes.
We used to go away to look for jobs, or go in schooners, or find anything else that you could get.
Yes.
Because there was no dole, you just depended on your own resources.
Yes.
Yes.
And why is it Craignish is so famous for fishermen and so on? How is it that so many schooner captains and so on came from such a tiny village?
Well, you might say they were all reared with their feet in the sea, and the sea seemed to be in their blood. I remember in my time, at least from 30 to 40 men and boys out of the village of Craignish alone that was going to man these boats that we've already spoken of. And some of them rose up to be in, after they left the fishing, of course, went into the windjammers, the schooners first, then the big windjammers, and got their qualifications, and some of them rose to be commodores and some of the crack lines some out of Liverpool.
By Jove.
I could name three or four like that that I knew that came to the right to the top in my lifetime.
Yes.
Mm. Yes.
They must have been hard men.
Well, they were all men, you see. They were sailors.
They were sailors.
They were sailors, that's all.
Dangerous life.
It was a dangerous life. And not a pleasant one either.
And no insurance, I suppose?
No, nothing.
That was it.
If you were lost, everything was gone.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm. A hard life then.
Oh, it was a hard life, all right. There's no doubt about that.
Mm.
You know, people say to me many, many a time, oh, we were born far too soon, and that was quite true compared with, to think of it,
yes,
the way that what people as to how people are placed today compared with what they were in my day.
Yes.
Yes.
What school did you go to, Mr. Madrill?
I went to school in Port Erin at first, where we paid threepence a week.
Oh.
and it was an old lady that kept it. I spent, I suppose, 2 or 3 years at that, and I knew just as much when I left as when I started. Yes, because I spent the most of the time, along with others, four of us going from Craignish, four boys about the same age. The rest was, I don't know, how did it come to be that we were sent to this school in Port Erin, because the most of the other boys of the village was going to Port St. Mary then. But we spent most of these years plain truant. And when it was found out that we were plain truant and we were not attending the school, we were taken and put sent back to Port St. Mary, and I never played truant an hour since that. Yeah, yes. I took an interest in the thing in Port St. Mary, but the woman that kept this school really did. She had no authority over the people, over the scholars at all, and they didn't mind what she did and what she said. And she, everybody had their own way.
And when did you leave?
Where?
Port St. Mary. At what age did you leave school?
I left school before I was 13. I was 13 in August, and I left, and the summer holidays before that, you know, about a month earlier than, say, it would be in July, you see, would be the summer holidays. So I never went to school after that.
What did your father do, Mr. Madrill?
Oh, he followed the sea, the same as I did. And the land, of course, or anything he could get to do.
Yes.
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 And where did you learn Manx, Mr. Madrill?
I learned.
Just at school or talking about yourselves at home?
Oh, no. You did? It was he was an English schoolmaster that I went to, you see, in Port St. Mary, you know. He couldn't speak any Manx. No, I learnt my Manx from an old great aunt in Craignish. Yes. I was taken from my parents when I was 5 years of age for to be company for her when her son, she had an only son, was away at the fishing, and she would be alone. She was an old woman, of course. And I was to be her companion, if you like to call it.
Yes.
And that I remained with her, and that's where I learnt my Manx.
I'm not
a Manx scholar.
No.
Oh, I'm not a Manx scholar.
But you're a Manx
but I'm
speaker.
A Manx speaker.
Yes.
Yes. And the real thing, although the upstarts today tells me that I've pronounced the words wrong. Yes. Yes.
Oh.
Yes. Some of the ones that used to come to me could I tell them what was so and so and so such and such a thing? And they've got the cheek to tell me now that I'm saying the words wrong. But I say the words. I speak the Manx that was spoken in this island, not only around in this parish, it's in this island,
yes.
100 years ago.
Yes.
Yes.
Now
I've been speaking it since I was, well, before I was, my first recollection of speaking Manx was one time I fell downstairs. And I got a bash, of course, falling downstairs, my nose was bleeding. And the old aunt heard the rumble of me coming down. She ran to the stairs and she held out her apron, and I tumbled into it, and she brought me to my mother, who was sitting nursing a younger brother than me. And she says to her, Shachkawa, which means, here, take him. This was me. And I seemed to stick to me, and I couldn't have been more than 2.5 years at that time.
Right.
But what made me remember it so well was the people used to say afterwards, what did Auntie say, you see?
Yes.
And I was repeating what Auntie said.
Yes.
And this it impressed and it stuck to me.
Yes.
And I can remember all that when I was only... Well, that was then 90 years ago.
Yes, indeed. Well, written Manx always seems very difficult.
Yes,
you know,
it's written,
I think that what must have put a lot of people off learning Manx was the way it's written. It doesn't look like anything, does it?
Well, no, I suppose it is a difficult language, you know, if you're not brought up with it.
Yes,
Yes, I'll admit that, yes.
You see, that calendar, for instance, when you see these words...
Aye.
You wouldn't really know how to pronounce them.
No.
You were right or
no,
wrong.
Well, that's what I say. I've still got the proper pronunciation.
Yes.
At least what I've been taught.
Yes.
But they're trying to alter that now.
Yes.
They're spoiling the thing by doing that, in my opinion.
Yes, of course.
And it's the same, I suppose, in every language.
Mm.
When it's, when you start to modernize it, you spoil it.
You lose the
yes
thing about it.
Yes. The same thing applies to the Irish or the Scottish.
Yes.
Just the same. Mm. They're modernizing the thing. And one, people of today, in some of the, well, in Ireland and Scotland especially, the older people couldn't understand what the young ones would say. If the thing was opposite, the young ones wouldn't understand what the old people were saying.
No.
So they've got a language of their own.
Mm.
Yes.
I suppose a lot of these sayings are a bit dry, you know, because they're dry people, the Manx, aren't they? You know, some of these sayings that they have, you know, must be quite sort of funny in their own way.
Oh, yes, they were, of course. Yes, that's quite true.
You know
true.
How you have these sayings like... But yes, that's right. Yes, these dry sayings, you know, that they have. the church up there hasn't got a graveyard, has it?
No. No, no, that was only just a that was a playground, that was a church and a school.
Oh.
But that was built in, I think, 1889, I think it was. But it didn't run for very long as a school.
No.
No.
But Russian, of course, is the churchyard for the Craignish.
Oh, yeah, oh, the Russian, you mean the churchyard. Oh, yes, yes, yes.
There isn't a churchyard at Craignish, of course.
Oh, no, 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 no. They're all, oh, no, no.
Because Russian would Russian, be the parish
Russian,
church.
Russian churchyard has got to, it catered for the whole of the parish.
Yes.
Yes.
And are the same families living up Craignish that lived there in your day, the same names?
There's only two living in Craignish today that was born in it.
Is that so?
Yes.
Bad.
That's all.
By Jove. And what about round here?
Oh, well, we're surrounded with the come-overs round here, you know. Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yes. They're all the retired people. That,
yes.
Well, mostly, yes. I know.
But it's a very nice spot.
It's a nice spot.
Yes.
But I'll say this.